I have to reach into my notes here. There's an announcement. I just got a letter announcement. This happens twice a year with my show. The Federal Communications Commission changes my frequency twice a year, because this is I'm right on the cusp of the evening, and so as we move into winter hours, my summertime frequency of 9.350 is not as effective, so they switch me over to 5.070. That's the mainstay frequency. That's the original frequency of the WWCR station. So at any rate, as of October 28th, 2012, my show will be broadcast on 5.070. So make a note of that if you're listening to WWCR. And that does not affect the Friday night or Saturday morning shows. It's also, of course, available on the internet. It's not a time change. It's still going to be 6 p.m. Central Time. So at any rate, just make a note of that. October 28th, 6 p.m. Central Time, Thursday evening, my show, the same time and everything, but will air on 5070 megahertz with WWCR. And once again, if you have any questions, go to my webpage. That's all on my webpage, all of that information, and I'll have the update on the webpage, jmccsci.com. Okay, let me look here. Another interesting thing that happened this past week, a man named Felix Baumgartner jumped from a balloon. He went up to 120,000 feet. That's a long ways up there. Anyway, he jumped out, and the claim was that he broke the sound barrier. So at any rate, what happened is he jumped out of the airplane, or the balloon, and I guess he went up to about close to 900 miles per hour. But I want to talk about this a little bit. And here again, we don't have a intelligent reporting news media, because in thin air, the speed of sound is very different than it is at ground level. And so there was no sonic boom, so to speak. The speed of sound, when you break the speed of sound, so to speak, it's when the air is separated by the passing object, an airplane, a jet plane, or something to that effect. And the air does not respond. It cannot get back in a nice, smooth fashion. So what happens, there's like a gap, and when the air comes clapping back together, it makes a boom, a snapping sound. Other natural effects that do this are, one is lightning. When lightning goes through the atmosphere, it separates, it creates a separation in the atmosphere, and when the atmosphere comes crashing back together, it causes a boom. So lightning is followed by thunder. And you can tell how far away the lightning bolt was by the thunder. That you're counting, you see the lightning bolt, and then count. 1,000, 2,000, 1,000, 3,000, 1,000. And for every second that the thunder is delayed from the lightning, I forget what the distance is. I think it's 1,400 feet or something per second. That's the speed of sound, depending on air pressure, etc. But you can tell how far away the lightning was by the amount of time after the lightning, the lighting up of the atmosphere, and the thunderbolt. Another one is the cracking of a whip. And so that's really interesting that there are natural phenomena that will cause that same phenomena, breaking the sound barrier. I remember when I was a kid, not to date myself too much, but I remember when the first airplane broke the sound barrier. It was a very big deal. So at any rate, that's another phenomenon that broke the sound barrier. But when Felix Baumgartner jumped and was up in the upper atmosphere, he's going 900 miles an hour, there was no sonic boom because he was basically almost in vacuum. And then he slowed down as he came into the atmosphere. I think it was quite a phenomenal, it certainly was front page news, but it also brings up the possibility that someday somebody like this that's crazy enough, Daredevil, would jump out of a spaceship orbiting and have some kind of aero-braking device on, a balloon or something, where they'd come into the atmosphere and basically free fall into the atmosphere from an orbiting spaceship. The only difference is you're going about 17,000 miles an hour when you come in from low Earth orbit. So there's a lot of heat generated, and so you have to slow down, and we land satellites back on Earth. Also, they've landed them on Mars using a technique called aerobraking. So, in other words, a big balloon comes into the atmosphere, a low density, very large object. And so causing the object to slow down. And this gives me a chance to talk about the space shuttle, which is now a defunct museum piece. But it's the when the space shuttle comes back in to the atmosphere, it is a very, very heavy object for its size, very dense, and so it creates a lot of heat. But if I were to design a reentry vehicle, I would make something very big and very light. And so it would come gliding back in, slow down. It wouldn't create a lot of heat. And you could glide back into the atmosphere. Okay, so anyway, but congratulations to Felix Baumgartner for doing something I sure wouldn't do. Jump out of a balloon at 120,000 feet and hope to stay in one piece till you hit the ground with a parachute. So anyway, yeah, that took a lot of of nerve and, of course, knowledge. He had to know what he was doing. Something that's going on right now. We are, when was it? Last year, I think we had a lot of wind activity, and I defined a term called the winds of Jupiter. The winds of Jupiter. And it looks like we are in that right now. We have a good deal of wind around the planet, and like we have windy days, you always have windy days. But the question is, if there's a tremendous amount more of wind than normal, then what is causing this? Because these things just don't happen on their own. There is a reason for the winds that are going on. So I've defined a term, and what happens is we become electrically aligned with Jupiter. And that's going on right about now as we speak. And so I'll be doing a little bit more analysis on this. I had mentioned that back in the 90s, the military measured a very powerful electrical surge that hit Earth from Jupiter, mainly electrons, and they couldn't figure out where all these electrons were coming from. But basically, Jupiter, like all the planets, is discharging the solar capacitor. And, of course, I had this nailed down in my theoretical work back in the 1970s. And it took up until the 1990s for the military satellites, of which there are many that they don't tell us about, by the way, but to actually measure one of these electrical connections. It was a Velikovskian type of lightning bolt between Jupiter and Earth. And, of course, the ancients talk about this. And I'm hoping that we're going to see this comet, C2012S1, discharging to other planets. And I think we're going to see it next October, early next October, late September 2013, when this comet comes remarkably close to Mars, and I talked a lot about that last week. But right now, Earth and Jupiter are connecting up electrically, and that is driving our storms. Just a quick note here. Last Sunday, the corn seed sale finished. And so I know a lot of people got in on that, and I'm really happy. We will be finishing up shipping all of that in the next, next week or so. And mind you, it's a very big effort. That has been a very big effort because all of this is hand packaged, let's put it that way. There's nothing mass produced here. But what does this allow? This allows the people out there to be autonomous, to have corn. The ability to raise corn is something that's enormous. This is a huge, historically, corn has been one of the largest grain crops ever in the world. And, of course, the biggest grain crop in the United States is corn. And all of the other grains get their depend on the on corn for their pricing, basically. So the ability now, I just should mention too, I've gotten some interesting results back from people who are farmers, and some who had raised the corn and gotten varying results. But I got information from one farmer, and he said he didn't get very good results. And so I kind of looked into it. I thought, okay, now what would cause this one person to have variable, you know, not very good results? And what I found out is that some people have tried to grow this. This is an organic non-hybrid corn seed, and so some people had tried to grow it in places where they had previously grown or hybrid corn that had been sprayed. The area had been sprayed with insecticides and pesticides and other harsh chemicals, etc. And so the end result is that they did not have very good results. So at any rate, that's what I found out, is that some people had not that great a results, but that was why. So at any rate, but I know other people had amazing success with this, and so that's something that I know they then will save their seeds, and they will have be able to pass that on. And right now, what I did is, because I don't know what's going to be going on this coming spring, I decided to take the whole population of corn and distribute it in the fall. So the people that get it now will be able to, they will have it no matter what happens between now and spring. This corn has already been distributed to far and wide. And so that allows the corn species to continue. And this is the good stuff. This is dent corn, the original farm, what you would call field corn. And so anyway, I'm real happy with the results of and this will be the last time I ever deal with the corn. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm waiting till this all shakes out. And then we're going to take a look at it, and there might be just a little bit left. I might have one little last shot of this on the webpage for sale, but I have to see where we're at before actually announcing that. So stay tuned. If you were still interested in getting some corn, we're going to see what everything looks like after all the shipments are done, after we're sitting there looking at what's left. We may have a little bit more sale. It won't be much. So if you're interested, keep an eye on, listen to the show, and I'll make announcements, or keep an eye on the webpage, jmccsci.com. So anyway, just a little aside note, that some of the most depleted land in the world is in the central United States. And this year, the corn crop was at about 20%. The U.S. government did not like to make that announcement, but that is really what was going on. Without further ado, let me see if I have any other announcements here. No, that's about it. And I'm going to start talking about the comet now. And this has been a topic which just gets more interesting every time I dig deeper into it. Let me see here. November 15th. What I've got here is a list of dates, and I'm seeing some new complicated patterns also. There are some issues that could cause some earth weather during certain days here. And so what I'm going to do is give some dates. And first of all, I want to concentrate on this coming Sunday, October 21st. So here's what you can do. With binoculars, go out in the morning sky, in the morning, anywhere from about 2 to 3 o'clock in the morning, where I forget what time Venus comes up as the very bright morning star, go out into your backyard or wherever where you have a good view of the eastern sky, and the very brightest planet up there is going to be Venus. Now, right now, if you watch at sundown or sunset right now, Jupiter is coming up off the horizon. So don't confuse Venus and Jupiter. They're the two brightest objects in the sky. Jupiter would still be in the sky, but more to the west. But the very bright object you're going to see in the eastern sky is Venus. Now, starting about, I would say, Saturday for sure, get up early in the morning with binoculars if you can, and watch that bright object. If you can get a tripod or stabilize your binoculars on something, that's even better. And by the way, binoculars for astronomy are a little bit different than binoculars for land viewing or daytime viewing or sports viewing. Astronomical binoculars have a coating, and it makes allows a much better definition of very faint objects. So any binoculars would do, but astronomical binoculars, the way you can tell if your binoculars are coated is to see if it says fully coated lenses and optics on the binoculars. And if it does, you've got a good set of binoculars for astronomy viewing. And by the way, binoculars are not that expensive. For decent astronomical viewing, binoculars, and they're the best. A lot of times people take a telescope or one of the very long, thin refractor telescopes, and they try and look at a comet through one of those or planet Venus, and you get a very narrow field of view. So the very best optical equipment to look at a comet or like Venus to see if it has any cometary activity or the comet itself is going to be with handheld binoculars or just relatively modest-sized binoculars. I myself have a set of professional-grade astronomical binoculars, and they weigh about 20 pounds. They're about a foot and a half long. The lenses are about 4.5 inches in diameter, and they're my very favorite thing, piece of equipment for looking at comets. And it has a big, heavy tripod. And when you see a comet, you see the wide field of view. It's much better than my telescope. I have a very nice Meade Cassegrain telescope. And the binoculars are way, way, way better. So at any rate, a little bit on viewing. Okay, so this Friday and Saturday is the first chance we're going to get to see both the comet up in the sky, Jupiter, which is relatively in the same area of the sky as the comet, although they're not going to be electrically connecting that much. But look at that bright planet Venus and just look at it, and then do the following. Move your binoculars off in the direction away from the sun. so that Venus itself is out of your field of view, and look for a very faint comet tail coming off of the planet Venus. If you have Venus, that bright object, in your field of view, it's going to drown everything out, and your eyes are going to adjust to a very bright object, and you're not going to see anything faint. So after you take a look and position yourself where you can see Venus in your binoculars, move off in the direction away from east, away from the rising sun, and at that time the sky will still be very dark. But you can tell where the planets and the stars are coming up off the horizon. That's east. That's where the sun is going to be coming up. And by the way, always have to tell people, do not ever look at the sun with binoculars or your naked eye. Never look at the sun, even at sunrise. It can damage your eyes. But here's what I want you to do. Look, when you find Venus in your binoculars, move away in the direction away from the east, away from the rising sun, and then hold it there. If you have a tripod, it's certainly much better, and see if you can see any tail activity. Now the question is, where is the comet? This is Comet C2012-S1. Okay, now let's swing across the sky to Jupiter, the second brightest object in the sky, and then just look a little bit back from there, just a little bit up in the sky, and possibly you'll be able to see the comet. Now the comet still is a fair distance away, but the hope is that Saturday morning, in that time frame, all of a sudden the comet will come alive due to this electrical alignment. In other words, there is a true straight line between the comet and Venus and the sun. What happens then? Well, the comet itself is a long electrical discharge between the comet nucleus and the sun. That's what's and that electron beam is potentially can connect all the way to Venus, because Venus is just like a comet. It's discharging the solar capacitor. Then what that does is it creates an electrical path that goes all the way from Venus to way out beyond Jupiter. Now you have some serious distance of outer space that you're discharging. There's a lot of stored energy there, and that can cause Venus itself to explode into or develop a comet tail. And so this is going to be our very first test. Or the other possibility is that the comet itself will become excited during that time and flare up. So it'll be very interesting to see these initial results. Okay, then on November 15th, it's somewhat of a strange triangle complex combination between Earth, Mercury, the new moon passing, and the comet, and Jupiter at a slight angle away from all of this also. So the new moon is on November 13th. This is just coming up this next month. So put this on your calendar also. So it's the time frame is from November 15th to 18th. So we have an Earth-Mercury alignment, and that can be a fairly good alignment, but the other thing is it's coupled with a new moon passing. It's almost like someone had planned all of this. And so this could give us a little bit of a jolt in that time frame in terms of Earth weather. November 15th to 18th. Could we have some late hurricane season activity of some kind? Because there's so many things coupled here. We have Earth, we have Mercury, we have the new moon passing. Remember, when the new moon occurs on November 13th, 2 days later, when the new moon passes away from in front of the new moon passes from in between Earth and the sun, around the 15th or 16th, 17th in that time frame, that can give a jolt to that electrical system on Earth, our geomagnetic field. And then this is coupled with Comet C2012. It's kind of a triangular alignment, but these things can hook up We've got Jupiter out there, which Earth is already connected to. So we could see some activity here around November 15th to 18th. This is what I was talking about at the beginning of the show, that I've noticed a lot of these, more of these electrical alignments. So I'm just going to quick kind of go through a laundry list here of dates, and I've covered these pretty much into next year. So let me quick go over these, and by the way, I'll be talking more about these in the future, also posting them on my webpage. Okay, so let's start with coming up here. The Venus, anywhere from this weekend would be the best time for this alignment to actually kick off some activity with Venus or the comet, some excitation in there. Venus in the early morning sky, the comet is out beyond the orbit of Jupiter still. Perfect electrical alignment with the comet and Venus. Watch in the morning sky for comet-like activity around Venus or the comet excitation. And I somewhat described where those would be in the sky. So let's go out to November 15th to 18th. I talked about this somewhat strange, somewhat triangular, long, thin triangular connection, Earth-Mercury, new moon passing, and the comet, and Jupiter. So that's quite a number of significant issues going on all at the same time. And when these things add and couple, the more that are added and coupled at the same time, the more chance you have of something happening, the more power you can get into the electrical discharges. Okay, November 27th, plus or minus 2 days, Mercury. This is still in 2012. Mercury, the same issue that we're seeing with Venus, has a very good electrical connection with the comet. And so we could, because Mercury is very close to the Sun, we could possibly see some surface interactions with the Sun, between Mercury and the Sun. It's one of the big causes of local activity, especially when comet activity lines up with Mercury. I saw some videos of comets where they discharged with the planet Mercury, very visible electrical discharge, and of course standard science denies all of this, sweeping it under the rug. They don't want to talk about this. Then January 15th, 2013, now I already talked about this in some detail, that's going to be the first day with Earth activity, where there's very likely could be significant Earth activity. And it's a great date because it's way out of the standard hurricane season or tornado season or foul weather season. We can always get bad weather, of course, in January, but it's away from that February time period when we sometimes have winter tornadoes. But January 15th is not the kind of date where you would expect a lot of bad weather on Earth. So it's a really good test of this comet and the strength of the comet. Also, the new moon passing on January 13th helps a lot because on the 15th, when the Earth and comet alignment occur, and by the way, the comet is still way out by the orbit of Jupiter, so it's a significant ways away. But the 15th, 16th of January, 2013, plus or minus 1 day, that's another good test for Earth interaction with this comet. Then we move on to February 22nd, 2013, Mercury once again. In every couple months, Mercury and the comet are going to have a real good interaction. So that's something that we're going to get to see, have bird's eye view, the SOHO cameras. Let's see if NASA shuts those babies down just around those dates so that nobody can see what's really going on. In that particular February 22nd, Mercury will be in the evening sky, low on the horizon. February 22nd, Mercury in the evening sky, low on the horizon. Like I say, if you're taking notes, that's fine, but I'll have all of this on the webpage outlined in detail. Then we move out to May 22nd, plus or minus 2 days, Mercury again. And so we go from February to May in Mercury once again. And now remember that the comet is moving in, gaining power. It's having interactions with the other planets, so it's going to kick it up in energy. Every time one of these interactions occurs, that comet is going to bump up in energy, will become excited. And remember that most comets that come into the solar system may have one interaction. Rarely do they have even one, or would be very rare to have two. But this comet is going to have a boatload of interactions. Okay, so that was May 22nd, plus or minus 2 days, Mercury. June 4th, plus or minus 5 days, we have another interaction with Venus. And at that time, Venus will be in the evening sky. The comet will be about 3.5 astronomical units from the sun. That's about two-thirds of the way between Mars and Jupiter. So at any rate, that's something that will be going on June 4th. That's another date. Then we move on to August 18th, plus or minus 2 days, another Mercury encounter. This time Mercury will be in the morning sky, the early morning sky. And all of this time we'll be watching the SOHO satellites. It's sure going to be funny if NASA shuts down SOHO every time one of these alignments comes up. And, of course, they have the Swan filter on SOHO, too, which is looking back, looks for comets. It'll have a very good view of the comet side of this interaction. Okay, up to October 3rd, and I spent a lot of time on this already. I'm not going to review all of that. You have to go back and listen to my previous last few shows. But October 3rd, 2013, plus or minus a couple weeks, and even as much as a month earlier, that comet is going to start to interact with the planet Mars. As Mars moves around in its orbit, starts to pick up an electrical alignment with this comet. By then, the comet could be picking up quite a bit of steam. It could be a fairly significant comet at that point. It's going to be moving in towards and actually intersecting with the orbit of Mars, coming extremely close to Mars. And by the way, I have to correct a previous statement. I said that Mars would not be visible. It would be lost in the morning of the early morning light. But that is not correct. That I guess I'm human after all. But the fact of the matter is that we will have an excellent early morning view of Mars and the comet interaction. And I can guarantee you I will be pounding on this in the months and weeks that lead up to this interaction for everybody to go out and look at this. And this could be the thing that blows the cover off of all of NASA's hard work to try and keep this information from the public. Because a lot is going to happen here. Mars will actually disappear into the comet tail. This will be the first time in history when we have, of course, we have the Schumacher-Levy 9, the little teeny comet pieces that crashed into the backside of Jupiter, convincing the vast majority of rational scientists around the world that comets could not possibly be dirty snowballs. But this interaction with Mars is going to be very interesting. It could change, one of the two, Mars or the comet or both, are going to have their orbits changed. Mars will probably have a very different atmosphere after this. If the comet electrically attaches to Mars, good possibility that it'll hook into Olympus Mons and the other big volcanoes on Mars. Remember that Olympus Mons, the big volcano on Mars, the caldera, the top of that volcano, actually sticks out of the upper atmosphere of Mars. Very interesting. So if that could be something, we could see some surface scarring on Mars due to electrical discharges. We could see Mars end up with a whole new atmosphere. There's going to be some terraforming going on here. And if the comet nucleus is really big, we could see the orbit of Mars change. This is a shooting match here. And it's amazing that NASA is not saying a word, nor their little outreach, I call them NASA Trekkies, not saying a word about this on any of their sites. They're not mentioning a peep about this Mars encounter, and it's huge. This is a huge, huge event where a comet, a large comet, is going to interact with a interterrestrial planet, one of the inner three planets, Mars, Earth, and Venus, and it's going to have a nose-to-nose encounter with the planet Mars. So that's October 3rd, 2013. Okay, moving onwards, October 10th, 2012, remember that as the comet moves in, Jupiter will be swinging around in its orbit behind the comet. And so we could see some Jupiter interaction in this, discharging to the comet out there in the region, the far region of that comet tail. So Jupiter will be linked up with Earth during some of this time. So we could have some comet Jupiter-Earth interactions here. I kind of slowed down in making associations after that Mars October 3rd, 2013 encounter, because we don't know where this comet's going to end up. And even if I had very good data on the mass of this comet nucleus, it would still be very difficult because the comet orbit itself is going to change due to tail drag prior to that. So at any rate, that's something that's very interesting, that the comet orbit will actually change. That's why I personally grabbed, and this is something we did with Hale-Bopp back in the 90s, and with many other of the big comets, is their orbits actually change on a day-to-day basis. Where the comet orbit changes on a daily basis, and so that and of course the standard story with Hale-Bopp now in Standard Science is it had an interaction with Jupiter, and that's what changed its orbit from a 4,200 year orbit to a 2,600 year orbit, and that's patently false. On a daily basis over a 6 year period, comet Hale-Bopp lost, dropped down into a lower orbit due to tail drag. Okay, so then if this comet survives with the orbit unchanged, these sequences of planetary encounters will continue up until the, I think it's November, what was the date? Was it November 29th? That it would come the closest to the sun. Let me look at my notes here, see if I have that here. But I'm not even going to press that issue, because I think the comet orbit is going to change significantly, and the original predictions of NASA on its orbit, remember that these do not, the orbit of the comet that NASA puts out is based on only an interaction of the comet with the sun. It does not include an interaction with Jupiter. It does not include an interaction between the comet and Mars, and that's going to be huge. That's going to be very significant. They don't include any of this, and clearly they have enough information to determine the size of the nucleus, the density of the nucleus, a lot of the properties of the nucleus, the spin rate, what the surface looks like, and because they can do this with radio waves to see if it's a pitted surface or a smooth surface. All of this information they already have, but clearly they're not letting it out to the public. Okay, so during this series of encounters, we'll be able to see Earth and the other planets interacting with this comet. But I also want to make a watch where we look with radio waves, visual, infrared, X-rays, and then orbital changes, Mars, the moons of Mars, this comet, if it's large enough, could strip the two moons of Mars away or cause them to move into different orbits, this orbital changes of the comet. And then, by the way, this comet, my prediction is that it'll be drawn into an inner solar system orbit. Mars, if this comet is big enough, will have its orbits changed. If the comet is very small, insignificant in terms of mass relative to Mars, then Mars would relatively remain in its same orbit, but the comet would have a very significant change in its orbit. We could see changes in orbits in the asteroid belt. This could stir up the asteroid belt. We will see discharges between Jupiter and the other planets. This could kick Jupiter off and give us a view of the that the ancients talked about, where Jupiter was throwing lightning bolts across the sky at the other planets. So the whole solar system could pick up in energy. Remember that we are in an ebb, a very low ebb of solar system energy. The solar capacitor is at a very low ebb. Hale-Bopp discharged it for a period of 6 years and took a lot of the punch, a lot of the energy out of the solar capacitor. That's why we're currently in a very low ebb in our solar cycle. That's why there's just not a lot of power in the sun. The surface energy of the sun and the visible light and all through the electromagnetic spectrum is very low. But keeping an eye on Jupiter interactions is something we're going to be keeping an eye on. Okay, just a quick comment. There's another comet of interest going on right now. It's called Comet Holmes, H-O-L-M-E-S, H-O-L-M-E-S, Comet Holmes. And a number of years ago, I did a special on this comet. And it's out in an orbit that's near the planet Jupiter. And at the time, it was a comet, the coma, was as literally as big as the sun. The nucleus, of course, was small. But it flared up into this amazingly large comet. I did quite a bit of personally observing of that comet with my own equipment. But I did a special show on that. I rented airtime and did a special, a Comet Holmes special. And there's a web subpage on my homepage dealing with Comet Holmes. But interestingly enough, Comet Holmes is moving around back towards the orbit of Jupiter, and I predicted the last time it was here that, in fact, it would have an interaction with Jupiter, and it could possibly become a moon of Jupiter. It's coming that close that if it loses energy, it gets into that gravitational well of Jupiter, it could literally become trapped as a new moon of Jupiter. And so all of this amazing cometary activity is going on right now in the solar system, something definitely we're going to keep an eye on. And even if Comet Holmes does not become a moon of Jupiter, it's going to have its orbit change significantly. And there again, we can't predict exactly, because once those interactions occur, then there's a lot of variables, unpredictable variables, including tail drag, etc., that start to take place on the comet, and so we can't really predict where its orbit is going to be. So here we have a potential for a new comet, Comet C 2012 S1, coming into the solar system, being captured by Mars, with possibly being in a permanent new member of the solar system, with its orbit being changed, proving all of these things. The point is, proving all of the things I've been saying, that the members of the solar system are formed by capture, that the tail drag works on these comet orbits, that the interaction, the electrical interactions with the other planets is a significant aspect. And mind you that the electrical interaction itself does not change the orbits of the, nor do magnetic effects change the orbits. The magnetic effects are almost negligible, really don't have much at all to do with the orbits. Other things happen, electromagnetic plasma effects are huge, But then again, with Comet Holmes coming close to Jupiter, remember that the ancients described when Venus came by the planet Jupiter, and it exploded into brightness. Velikovsky, in his original work, interpreted that as being Venus coming out of Jupiter, that somehow Jupiter threw this comet out. And of course, that is not what happened, as one of the fatal flaws of Velikovsky's analysis in terms of astronomy, but he hit it right on the head. He was exactly correct, 100% correct, that the Venus became a bright comet as it approached Jupiter. And now we're going to see Comet Holmes approach Jupiter. We could see that very same effect. So the gloves are off here. And when you see, the other interesting thing is that Jupiter is up in the night sky, clearly visible. And so all of this fully visible to the entire planet. 6.5 billion people are going to be able to witness this, and much of this with the naked eye. They'll be able to actually see with the naked eye the interaction of these Comet Holmes and Comet C2012-S1 with the other planets, proving everything that I've been talking about. So it's very interesting. Of course, making predictions is very difficult business. It's very difficult because comets have been known to fizzle out. We have many examples of comets that came in. People made amazing predictions about how big they were going to be, and then they fizzled out. So I don't make predictions. The actual predictions of this being an amazingly big comet come from NASA. But when that's where it stops, that's where it ends, that's where they actually drop the ball, and they don't talk about the other interactions with Mars. Why would NASA, with all of its capability and astronomers, they certainly know that this comet is coming very close to Mars, that its orbit will change, so why are they predicting that it's going to come near the Sun? It just doesn't make any sense. Why would they eliminate that? Why would they not even mention that? Well, the reason is because it buys them a year of time. The interaction is not going to occur until October 3rd of next year, or the weeks leading up to that. So that buys them a whole year of time. At any rate, okay, well, I'm getting a beep here. I think I've got about a minute left in the show. So I just want to remind you that this show is brought to you commercial-free. Go to the JMCC-SCI website, the water filters, the other items there, and I want to welcome new listeners to the show. Every week we have a lot of new listeners. Remember that all of my shows are archived on the webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com, and some people out there don't have good access to computers for ordering. Find somebody that that you know that does, and work through them. They can always email or call, try and get information. But the best thing is, if you don't have internet access, find somebody that does, so you can put your orders in. But once again, this is going to be very interesting. Keep posted to my webpage. I have a special subpage for this new comet. And I'll be doing more analysis as this goes on, reviewing next week what happened this coming weekend. So I don't have a good timer on my show tonight, so I'll just assume I'm at about the end here. Close off saying, James, this is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.